It is Wednesday, February 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump nominates Colorado Judge Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. An organization assisting migrants expresses concern about the new White House suspension of refugee admissions.
So these are the victims of violence, the victims of terrorism. It's very important that we retain that distinction.
And fans of American football are getting ready for the biggest game of the year, the Super Bowl, and its big halftime show. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump late Tuesday announced his choice of federal appeals court Judge Neil Gorsuch as the nominee to replace the late Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonin Scalia, who died nearly a year ago. The 49-year-old Gorsuch sits on the Federal Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit in Denver, Colorado. At a White House ceremony, Mr. Trump said, after the defense of the nation, a president has no more important decision to make than the lifetime appointment of a Supreme Court justice.
I took the task of this nomination very seriously. I have selected an individual whose qualities define, really, and I mean closely define, what we're looking for. Judge Gorsuch has outstanding legal skills, a brilliant mind, tremendous discipline, and has earned bipartisan support. When he was nominated to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, he was confirmed by the Senate unanimously. Not only are we looking at the writings of the nominee, and I studied them closely, but he is said to be among the finest and most brilliant, oftentimes the writings, of any judge for a long, long time.
Gorsuch, a Colorado native who earned degrees from Columbia University and Harvard, clerked for Supreme Court Justices Byron White and Anthony Kennedy. In his remarks, he hinted at his judicial philosophy, saying it's the role of the judge to apply, not alter, the work of the people's representatives.
Practicing in the trial work trenches of the law, I saw, too, that when we judges don our robes, it doesn't make us any smarter, but it does serve as a reminder of what's expected of us. Impartiality and independence, collegiality, and courage. As this process now moves to the Senate, I look forward to speaking with members from both sides of the aisle, to answering their questions and to hearing their concerns. I consider the United States Senate the greatest deliberative body in the world, and I respect the important role the Constitution affords it in the confirmation of our judges.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer indicated Gorsuch will face tough hearings, expressing skepticism that he can be a strong, independent jurist. Western Connecticut State University history professor Kevin Gutzman tells International Edition's Victor Beatty Gorsuch shares similarities with the late Justice Scalia.
Like Scalia, he's readable, he's clear, he tends to take the same approaches both to the Constitution and to statutes as Scalia did. So Scalia purported to be an originalist when it came to the Constitution, to think that a particular provision of the Constitution ought to be read as it was understood when it was ratified. And when it came to statutes, Scalia said he was a textualist, that is, that he would ignore evidence of statutory, that is to say, of legislative intent, because he thought it was impossible actually to establish what a legislative body as a group thought. And Gorsuch has said the same things about his own views as Scalia did.
In this highly charged political atmosphere in Washington since Mr. Trump's inauguration, do you expect a stiff fight in the Senate?
It's possible that the Democrats will decide they need to make noise about this nomination by trying a filibuster, and I would think it likely that if that were to happen, the Republicans would go the last step and get rid of the filibuster altogether. I can't imagine the majority of Republicans deciding they're going to let the Democrats keep this from happening. There may be noise about it, but my guess is there's a very high chance that even if there were, Gorsuch is going to end up being Justice Gorsuch.
Northern Illinois University history professor Artemis Ward doubts that the confirmation of Gorsuch would alter the high court's ideological balance.
Well, certainly it does in the short term, but it all, of course, depends on when Justice Kennedy is leaving the court. Is he going to try to leave under President Trump? Is he going to wait longer? That's ultimately going to be the more telling moment. So this just replaces a conservative with a conservative, right? Scalia is replaced with Gorsuch. It doesn't really change the balance in that sense.
For those who don't follow the court closely, what does this selection, if it's approved by the Senate, mean for the legal picture here in the U.S.?
Since the mid-1980s, the court has been divided in the most contentious cases. And the court's sort of swing vote has been Justice Kennedy, essentially. Sometimes it's been Justice O'Connor. This pick doesn't change that makeup. The court is still very much divided among conservatives and liberals, with kind of Kennedy in the middle making the decision.
What are the issues that he may face if he's confirmed?
We've looked at Judge Gorsuch's record on these issues on the lower court. You know, he's served for nearly 10 years, and he does have a record, and he's written and given speeches and so forth. He has voted and said things that suggest that he's exactly like Scalia on these issues. And so you would see Judge Gorsuch in all likelihood in favor of gun rights and being probably skeptical of abortion rights.
President Trump may get a chance to fill another vacancy on the 9-justice court. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 83, while Kennedy is 80. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, there's a couple things trending. Not surprisingly, just given the import of last night's announcement, and as we've heard a discussion about President Trump's nominee for the associate justice spot on the Supreme Court, the hashtag SCOTUS hashtag is trending strongly right now. And I've been going through looking at a lot of the comments. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments. And I'll be honest with you, there's very little new. It's all sort of reaction. People just kind of, you know, I hate him, I love him, they're terrible, you're awful, blah, blah. And it's, you know, that sort of people kind of not talking to each other, but clearly talking past each other and talking to their own tribes, if you will. But there is another hashtag that is trending right now, and that is hashtag Black History Month. Now, in the United States, the month of February has been designated Black History Month. A lot of months sort of have these kinds of designations. And so people are very interested. What does this mean moving forward? It's an interesting moment. Here is, and I'm just going to share some tweets, a number of the tweets that are coming in today. So, for example, Norm Kelly says, today marks the beginning of hashtag Black History Month. Throughout the month, I'll be sharing stories of prominent Black Canadians. And interestingly, the first story that we have today is of Viola Irene Desmond. I only learned about her maybe a few weeks back. She was a Black Nova Scotian businesswoman, and she challenged racial segregation laws at a film theater in Canada years before Rosa Parks, you know, had her very famous moment now, that's the sit down, you know, and refuse to move on the Alabama bus.
Montgomery. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So interesting stuff. Here's Representative Barbara Lee. She's a member of Congress. Trump says he's, quote, honoring Black History Month. How? By nominating Jeff Sessions as AG or promoting alt-right leader Steve Bannon. Let's see. We can see if we can find some more. Optimistic. Let's see here. First day of, well, again, a lot of talk about Senator Sessions and his nomination, the Senate approving his nomination to be Attorney General. Here's Steve Hirsch. Thank you, Ben Carson. Today we celebrate your courage to stand up and speak the truth. Of course, Ben Carson is now likely to be the nominee or likely to be the next Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. He ran against Mr. Trump in 2016. So a lot of talk back and forth on what Black History Month means and how people are going to mark it.
Yeah, very interesting, particularly that bit about Nova Scotia.
Indeed. It's a great story.
It is great. Well, thanks a lot, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top stories trending. The U.S. Senate will vote on President Trump's choice to be Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. Experts are divided over the Trump administration plans for the United States in Afghanistan. And the European Union leader identifies Russia, China, and Trump as threats. Expanded coverage of some of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. The Earth's core, which lies nearly 3,000 kilometers below the surface, is made of two layers. At the very center of the Earth is the inner core, which scientists say is a solid sphere made of an iron-nickel alloy. Surrounding the inner core is the outer core, which is made of molten iron and nickel that's believed to be between 4,000 and 5,000 degrees Celsius. New data gathered by the European Space Agency's three-satellite swarm network is providing scientists with an X-ray view of the Earth's core. This information has led to the discovery of a jet stream flowing within the molten outer core. Like the jet stream of air currents flowing in the atmosphere, scientists explain that this jet stream in the outer core is a moving belt of molten material circling its magnetic north pole and traveling at a speed of about 40 kilometers per year. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, singer Lady Gaga will be the featured performer at the Super Bowl's halftime show. Controversy erupted in the United States and around the world when President Donald Trump signed an order temporarily suspending U.S. refugee admissions. White House spokesman Sean Spicer told reporters Tuesday that extreme vetting will be applied to all refugees. In addition to suspending refugee admissions for 120 days and indefinitely for Syrian refugees, Trump's order also bans entry for 90 days to anyone from Iran, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Libya, Somalia, and Sudan. Leonard Doyle is spokesman for the International Organization for Migration. Speaking from Geneva, he tells me his organization's response to the Trump plan.
Well, we're particularly interested in and concerned about those who were earmarked for resettlement and who were already in the pipeline, so to speak, having had their cases reviewed and their security checked and been found to be, you know, good potential new citizens of the U.S. So we're kind of really concerned that these people, many of them, oh, perhaps some 18,000 in all, have now been kind of set back to zero in their, at least, their claims reset. So we're worried about them in particular.
Have you made your concerns known to U.S. authorities?
Well, we issued a joint press release on Saturday with the UNHCR, in which we basically said that while we understand fully the need for a reset or the concerns about security, at the same time, we have special concerns about the vulnerability of these people.
Have you received a response?
Obviously, this is not a public discussion. So, you know, we engage with the U.S. administration at multiple levels all the time. So we're talking to them about all sorts of aspects.
You know, what about opponents of this new plan by the White House? You know, they were saying that the countries that in the past attackers have come from have not been from these countries. You know, do you have any thoughts about that?
I mean, our main concern is that the violence that's been creating displacement and refugees over the last, you know, 10 years or so is widespread, and it's not going away. And the suffering of people is increasing. So these are the victims of violence, the victims of terrorism. It's very important that we retain that distinction. At the same time, we recognize that, you know, there is enormous public concern about terrorism. Of course there is. And we somehow have to bridge the gap between the two. But humanitarian aid has, by its very nature, to be neutral, has to be non-discriminatory and based on the needs of the individual.
Leonard Doyle, spokesman for the Geneva-based International Organization for Migration. While Turkish forces continue to battle Islamic State for control of the strategically important Syrian town of Al-Bab, Turkey's deputy prime minister has ruled out returning it to the Syrian government. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, the comment is adding to growing questions over Ankara's long-term goal for its Syrian incursion.
Yahya Erdogan!
Yahya Erdogan!
Yahya Erdogan!
Yahya Erdogan!
In a video, hundreds of Turkish-trained Syrian police chant, "God is great, long live Erdogan," at their graduation earlier this month. The police are set to go on duty in towns recently captured from Islamic State during a Turkish military incursion into Syria launched in August. The video made many observers question where the newly trained police place their loyalty, with Syria or Turkey. That adds to a growing number of questions about the ultimate goal of Operation Euphrates Shield, Turkey's military incursion into Syria. Former senior Turkish diplomat Aydın Selçen, who has served widely across the region, says past experience indicates no early withdrawal.
Turkish armed forces stay in Syria will be for the long term, as it was in northern Iraq since early 90s. It is in northern Cyprus since the middle of 70s. And I do not see how and when Turkish armed forces will be able to leave, to extricate themselves. It is not in the tradition of Turkish armed forces to die, let's say, for a cause and then relinquish it to another.
Turkish forces have lost more than 40 soldiers in Syria, most battling to capture the town of Al-Bab. Speculation over Turkish intentions is increasingly focused on the town. Deputy Prime Minister Nurman Kurtulmuş ruled out the town's return to Damascus, saying it would go back to the Syrian people. But Turkish forces are continuing to try to oust Islamic State from the strategically important town, which is the gateway to Raqqa, the jihadist self-declared capital. Former diplomat Selçin warns Moscow too could be concerned over Turkish intentions.
You cannot also be an ally of Moscow and move beyond Moscow's wish.
International relations expert Soli Özel of Istanbul's Kadir Has University says Moscow is making its intentions clear, with Russian jets intervening on behalf of advancing Syrian government forces toward Al-Bab. Özel warns a potential showdown could be looming.
The Russians have cleared the path on the southern part of the city for the Syrian army actually to take it. If the Syrian military are advancing against Al-Bab from the south and the Turkish military from the north and the east, I think, can there be a confrontation if both of them try to enter the city center? I guess yes. I mean, at the end of the day, it is Syrian territory.
Experts point out the control of Al-Bab is key to Ankara in preventing Syrian Kurdish ambitions. The Syrian Kurdish forces of the PYD are seeking to control the town, as it would open the door to them finally connecting the last remaining isolated Kurdish canton of Afrin. That is a red line for Ankara, which accuses the PYD of secessionist aspirations and of being allied to the PKK, which is fighting the Turkish state. Analysts say the battle for control of Al-Bab now symbolizes the increasingly difficult situation Ankara is facing in Syria. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. This coming Sunday is the Super Bowl football championship, and its halftime show is always a highlight. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me to tell us about this year's featured performer.
Stephanie Germanotta, who is better known to the world as Lady Gaga.
Oh, okay.
And I thought we would make this timely feature on Lady Gaga, since she is the Super Bowl halftime performer this coming up Sunday at the big Super Bowl 51 in Texas. And she has a new album out, her fourth album, which is called Joanne. And it's named after an aunt of hers that passed away about 12, 13 years ago, but yet was very profound in her life, so much so that the family even opened a restaurant in New York City called Joanne's Trattoria. So they've got that going. And she wanted to name her fourth album after her, and it did go to number one. And Perfect Illusion was the first single. She's got a new single out now, which we're going to play today. But Lady Gaga has a $10 million production budget for her 15-minute Super Bowl halftime segment. And she's going to do something that I don't know that's either has never been done or hasn't been done in a long while. She's going to start her performance off on the roof of the stadium in Houston, Texas. And so there's a lot of security and safety concerns about that. She said it was my sister's idea. So she's going with it, and, you know, you never know. It might change by the time the Super Bowl rolls around, depending on the weather. If it's windy, that can affect things as well. This time around, the Super Bowl presentation is being sponsored by Tiffany, which is the first time in a long time that Tiffany's has been involved, although they've been involved since 1967 in another way, because Tiffany's, very famous, respected jewelry chain throughout the world, has designed the Super Bowl trophy, which is known as the Vince Lombardi Trophy, and they've been the designer since 1967. So, yeah, they're sponsoring Lady Gaga's performance, and she even appears in a Tiffany's Super Bowl commercial, and everybody loves those Super Bowl commercials. So let's check out Lady Gaga's new song, and this one's called Million Reasons.
You're giving me a million reasons to let you go. You're giving me a million reasons to quit the show. You're giving me a million reasons. Give me a million reasons. Giving me a million reasons. About a million reasons.
Okay, now sometimes, Larry, these Super Bowl performances, there's been some controversy. You know, a number of years ago, there was Janet Jackson, the wardrobe malfunction. There have been others, you know. So do you think Lady Gaga can avoid some of the controversy?
She's going to do her best. She says that she's not a political person, so don't look for politics. She's not going to do that. You know, you can get a lot of politics in showbiz these days. You watch the award shows and whatnot. You're hearing all kinds of comments. But she said, don't expect that from me. However, there may be other people who join her on stage during the show. And we don't know the details of who the guest performers will be, because that always is... That's always the caveat, the tricky point, is Lady Gaga herself is the main attraction for the show. She says, no, nothing, you're not going to see anything that's going to get me in any trouble. Hopefully no wardrobe malfunctions or anything like that. But, you know, she's going to do a great show, I'm sure. She's got, her fans, by the way, are known as little monsters. That's what she calls her fans. She has many, many, many little monsters around the world. She's always outrageous for what, you know, she wears, because you remember in 2010, she wore the meat dress to the MTV Awards show. And I think the meat dress is on display right now at the Smithsonian here in D.C. But nonetheless, it should be a spectacular show. That's what you attribute to Lady Gaga.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry London. That's our show. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A precision airstrike conducted recently by manned and unmanned U.S. aircraft against a training camp in Syria's Idlib province killed more than 100 al-Qaeda fighters, said Pentagon spokesman Navy Captain Jeff Davis. In a statement, Davis said that Sheikh Suleiman training camp had been operational since at least 2013. The removal of this training camp disrupts training operations and discourages hardline Islamist and Syrian opposition groups from joining or cooperating with al-Qaeda on the battlefield, said Captain Davis. Since January 1, 2017, U.S. strikes have killed more than 150 al-Qaeda terrorists, including Mohammed Habib Boussadoun al-Tunisi, an external operations leader killed January 17th. He was involved in facilitating Islamic extremism and external operations and had been connected to terrorist plots to attack Western targets. Al-Tunisi arrived in Syria in 2014 after spending several years in countries across Europe and the Middle East, where he maintained ties with multiple Islamic extremists, according to Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook. The terrorist's death, Cook said, will degrade al-Qaeda's pool of experienced, well-connected facilitators and fighters with external operations experience. Abdal Jalil al-Muslimi, a facilitator associated with a network plotting terror attacks in the West, was killed January 12. Muslimi, a Tunisian, was trained by the Taliban in the late 1990s, when he facilitated travel for the terror group, according to Press Secretary Cook. Muslimi also had extensive and long-standing ties to numerous al-Qaeda external operations planners and terrorists. Muslimi's role will be difficult for al-Qaeda to fill, Mr. Cook said. And the United States will continue to take action to deny these terrorists a safe haven in Syria from which to plot to attack the United States, its allies, or its interests. These strikes, conducted in quick succession, degrade al-Qaeda's capabilities, weaken their resolve, and cause confusion in their ranks, said Captain Davis. We will continue to exert unrelenting pressure to defeat violent extremist groups across the globe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.